morning. And let me join with Derek in expressing our appreciation and offering a welcome to each one of you that is here. It's good to see you, and we have a good number here this morning. One of the interesting things about life is there's always something new for each of us as we go through life. You come up and things become first-time experiences and that sort of thing. And I'll be honest with you, I've been wondering how it would go for a while when the first one of my siblings became a grandparent. I'm kind of thinking about that. None of us have been grandparents before. I wondered how that would be. Well, let me assure you they're going to be fine. Saw Grant for the first time this morning in less than 30 seconds. He had his phone out and showed me a picture of Lorelai. So the best I can tell, they've got it figured out, right? That's pretty much the job description. So glad about that. Glad for that good news for our family. But I want to begin the study this morning simply by posing a question for you. What does the Bible say about our relationship with God? I think that's a pretty good question. I mean, people talk about that a lot. We hear that phraseology, that term a lot. People will say, how's your relationship with God? Or what matters is your relationship with God? Or in fact, sometimes you hear, it's all about your relationship with God. So I thought about that idea. And I thought, well, I'm going to do a little digging on that. And so I know you can't read this, but this is how I do my initial digging. This is a search page for a word search on the online ESV Bible. So I went there and I plugged in the word relationship and I hit the button and no results. So I thought about that for a minute. Then I checked my spelling because that's always a possibility, right, when you do a search. But no, I spelled it right. And I thought about that a little more. I thought, a little bit surprised by that. Are you a little bit surprised by that? Then all of the ESV version of the Bible, the word relationship doesn't show up. I mean, people talk about relationship with God so much, but I thought is, well, it has to be there. So I thought a little longer. And it crossed my mind, that may be one of those King James terms that we've just all heard so much. We've brought that with us. We just expect to see it. So let me go try that. So I went to the, believe it or not, the King James Bible is on its line. And that, man, I've thought about that. But I went to the online King James and searched relationship. And guess what? No results. So now I was puzzled, right? Trying to think about that. But I don't know what else you can say about me, but I am tenacious. So I didn't give up. I don't give up that easily. So I thought about it. Well, maybe it'd be the American Standard. So I thought, well, I'll go over and check the online American Standard. And boom, there it was. One use of the word relationship. And then I read the verse and noticed really it's not even what I was looking for, though. It's talking about the relationship of the man and his wife. And while I was thinking about that, then I noticed that verse ended by saying, it is better not to marry. So I thought, well, I don't want to stay on that slide very long. But I kept thinking about that. And as I thought about these search results, I realized that another question kind of comes to mind. And that question is, does the Bible talk about our relationship with God? I would imagine we'd also absolutely, and absolutely is right. I think that's the right question. Really, you might say it is really kind of all about that, all about our relationship with God. You might even say that's the central theme. So I'm sure that we would all agree that it does talk about our relationship with God, even though the word relationship is not used. But it's interesting, isn't it? But that's good for us, I think, to stretch our minds a little bit to realize we can talk about a concept without using the word. We've talked about that here at Eastside before on the idea of the subject of grace. That there's lots of times in the Bible, in fact, I would suggest that grace is on every page. So we can go to the New Testament, for instance, and read a verse that doesn't have the word grace in it, but we're reading about grace. When we read about God's forgiveness, we're reading about grace. When we read about redemption, when we read about the gospel, we're reading about God's grace. And we said it this way, we need to learn to see grace even when it doesn't say grace. So what I'm going to suggest to you this morning is we need to learn to see relationship even when it doesn't say relationship. So I think we're agreed here that the Bible does talk about our relationship with God. But the question then is, how? What language can we look for to know that we're talking about our relationship with God? And I want you to think about that for a minute. How would you answer that question? What thoughts come to your mind when you think about how the Bible talks about our relationship with God? Think about that for a minute. I did. And let me suggest something for us to consider. And we'll go all the way back to Genesis chapter 5. Genesis 5:24 says, Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. You may read that and say, yeah, but what does that have to do with our relationship with God? And if you ask me that question, I would reply with a question. How would you describe what existed between Enoch and God? I think eventually you might get around to the word relationship, right? Or something very similar to that. So I think we can see relationship there in that existed between Enoch and God. I mean, so much so, God desired to have Enoch in his immediate presence so much that he exercised his divine power to just take him. God did that. That's what God did. That's God's side of their relationship. I think what I think about the human side, I think about Enoch's side. And truthfully, we don't really know that much about Enoch. Really about all we have is this here in Genesis chapter 5. But then a little more insight is given to us over in the New Testament in Hebrews 11 and verse 5. And if you read Hebrews 11 and 5, first part of the verse there, what you see, it really simply rephrases what we've already seen in the book of Genesis. But then the Hebrew writer adds, I think, a very important statement for us as we think about this. It says, now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. So Enoch walked with God, and here we're told Enoch pleased God. And that has to be an important aspect of our relationship with God, doesn't it? So I think it behooves us to understand a little better what even that means, to please God. And as is so often the case in the Bible, the answer is just simply keep reading. So you go down one more verse to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6, and we find that, and without faith it is impossible to please him. Whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. So we've already established that Enoch pleased God. What we learn from verse 6 is that Enoch had faith. Enoch drew near to God, and Enoch was a seeker of God. That describes Enoch's relationship with God. But I really want you to think about the language there, draw near, as we read in Hebrews 11 and 6. I mean, that is relationship language, is it not? I mean, if I said, hey, do you guys have relationship? You might say, yes, we're very close. Get it, close? You see the... Or you might say, hey, how's your guys' relationship? You might respond, we're not as close as we used to be. Right? I mean, that's how we talk about relationships, right? So that's the idea then, that Enoch was close to God. Enoch had a relationship with God. Enoch lived in God's presence. Or as we've seen, Enoch walked with God. And I know some of you are very astute Bible students. You're already thinking, hey, what about Noah? Well, that's a good question. Because back in Genesis again, in the very next chapter, in Genesis 6, we see this about Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And there's that phrase again. Noah walked with God. So now I'd ask you just to think about all we know about Noah. We have a little more record of Noah's relationship with God than we do with Enoch, but think about what you know about Noah from the story of the flood. And then again, over in Hebrews chapter 11, we have a little more commentary on Noah. Hebrews 11 and verse 7, the writer says, by faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. So what the Hebrew writer makes clear to us here is that Noah heeded God's warning not because he feared a flood, he hadn't seen a flood, but because he feared God. Noah believed God had the power to destroy the world. But equally important, Noah trusted that God would use his power to deliver the faithful. Noah feared God. Noah trusted God. Noah obeyed God. And we're told Noah walked with God. So as we think about Enoch and Noah here, then let's think about what we can learn about what it means to walk with God. And I'm going to suggest to you that perhaps the easiest or best way to think about that for me is to simply take that little phrase and break it down into its constituent parts. Walk with God. Now we know when we see the idea or the word walk in the Bible, we're talking about a manner of life, right? So that's a manner of life. With clearly indicates an awareness of the presence of another. And in this instance, that other is God. That other is our all-loving Father and the all-powerful Creator. So I think what we're saying here is to walk with God is to live in awareness of His presence and His power. And the point for us this morning is that the Bible connects our relationship with God to walking with God. And that's what I want us to think about this morning. Walking together. Our relationship with God. Again, I think it's important to see that's how the Bible talks about it. That's such an important connection. And I think for some pretty obvious reasons. Let's be honest. The word relationship is a little bit squishy, isn't it? Word relationship is somewhat subjective and maybe even vague if we want to start talking about that idea or concept. I mean, let's be honest. Ladies, there's a reason why you see that look of terror in your boyfriend or husband's eyes when you say, let's talk about our relationship. Because it's kind of a vague concept to kind of think about, talk about. So I think we benefit from the fact the Bible uses very practical language for us here. Because think about the contrast. Instead of talking about relationship, we can talk about walking. Well, walking lends itself to direction, doesn't it? Walking lends itself to objective instructions. In other words, I can know where I'm going. I can know how to get there. And along the way, I can even confirm if I'm on the right path, right? So that's reassuring. That's comforting. I want to suggest to you that the Bible shows us that walking together is a reassuring and a comforting way to teach us about our relationship with God. So for us this morning, then we simply want to look in the New Testament and see if we can find that same type of language. And then learn how to translate our walk with God to our relationship with God. And that's how we ended up in Ephesians chapter 5. So look back with me, the passage that Sam read for us, we read together this morning, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 1 through 8. Because I want to suggest to you that Paul here establishes relationship, and really everything he's going to say is on the foundation of relationship, because he's addressing the Philippians as beloved children. And what I would suggest to you is that you begin your walk with God every day when your feet hit the floor. Think of yourself as a beloved child of God. Think about that. What if that was your primary identification? Who am I? I am a beloved child of God. Think of the power of thinking about yourself that way. Think about the power of thinking yourself as always and in every moment and in every situation as a beloved child of God. Think about when you hit the floor in the morning and you know I am a beloved child of God, how will that affect your first interaction with your spouse? Or your first interaction with your roommate? Or when you get to work, your first interaction with a coworker? Or any other situation that comes up along the way? If you remember first and foremost, I am a beloved child of God. If I will remember that, I know God loves me. That will drive within me, I think, a desire to reciprocate that love that He has shown. If we're where Paul goes next. He wants us to be imitators of our Father. He's loved us, and he wants us to imitate him. And think about how clear that is. So Jesus will answer the question, that's the greatest commandment, right? It's to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. That's our highest. You might say, what's the most important, what's our most important thing about relationship with God? Well, it's to love him with our all. And I say, yes. Then Jesus immediately follows up the greatest commandment with, says the second is like it. And now he talks about imitating or replicating or acting on that, because now you love your neighbor as yourself. So we learn then that our relationship with God is more than just how we feel about him. Our relationship motivates us to live like him. Our relationship motivates us to imitate him. And you think about that. That happens in the human world too. When little girls play dress up, they want to look like mommy. When little boys want, you know, four cans with a shaving cream on their face so they can play like their... Little kids want to imitate their parents, and that principle then makes sense with us. And certainly there's some aspects of God's character that we cannot copy or mimic, but his righteousness, his holiness, his goodness, we have to imitate those to the best of our ability. Not only will we imitate our Father, Paul here says, yes, we'll imitate Christ. And he tells us we do that by loving and living sacrificially. That's what Christ did. And for us, that will call on us to love others enough to give up self, not just give up stuff, but to give up self sacrificially. It'll call on us to live in lives not only to not do what I want, which that sounds sacrificial to us. But think about this, to stop doing things that hurt the others in my life. That's loving and living sacrificially. And we can do that, but to do that, then we have to trust in his power to change us. But we want to do that as we imitate our Father, as we imitate Christ. And Paul's point here, I think, for the Ephesians is when you do all that, we're just beloved children of God walking in love. That's what that looks like. So I think the principle we see here and what I want us to take away is that our relationship with God governs our walk. We try to imitate God and walk in love because we are God's beloved children. So our relationship with God is not just about the feels. It's also about the do's. That we take the love we have for God and then we walk together with God. And we walk in a way that is proper for saints. That's where Paul goes next. So our walking has to be appropriate to our relationship with God. That's really that distinction. We're called out. We're set apart. We're sanctified. We're holy. Our relationship with God does that. And our walk has to be in accordance with or appropriate for that. And in a practical sense, Paul says that walking together with God prohibits all impurity and greed. Look there at verse 3, the kind of things Paul says won't be part of your walk. Walking with God prohibits sinful thoughts and deeds. Verse 3, just think about sexual morality. It's not proper for those walking in relationship with God to engage in a sexual relationship outside of marriage. It's just not proper. Impurity, as it's used here, that word means unclean in thought and life. So sexual morality would be the act, impurity would be the thought and life. It might be those thoughts of lust, or maybe particularly when it's used in conjunction with our connection with sexual morality, it's those kind of lustful sexual thoughts. For our purposes, I would suggest to you that pornography would be condemned by verse 3 here, but not by the term sexual morality. It would be covered by the term here, impurity. But Paul would be talking about that. He says, no, it's not proper among saints. And then he talks about covetousness. And you think about that word covetousness as we just kind of drill down on that. We're talking about greed. So really we're talking about selfishness. We're really talking about self-centeredness at the core of it. And what I'm going to suggest to you at this point is, would you want to be in a relationship with someone who always thought more about themselves than you? Well, God doesn't want to be either. And that's something we learn here about how that impacts relationship. And those type of things, Paul tells that here, they cannot be tolerated among the children of God. And so much so as it impacts the way we live, he says we shouldn't even be joking or laughing about sin and sexual immorality. But he uses the phrase out of place. And that really brings all this back around to relationship, doesn't it? Out of place for who? Out of place for those in relationship with God. Out of place for those walking together with God. And I want you to hear to see that idea of awareness of God's presence in our life. Because of an awareness of God's presence, there's things that we're not going to do. There's things that are out of place. So we can see then, as I walk through this life and I'm aware of the presence of God, that becomes a deterrent. That will keep me from doing some things I should not do if I will keep in mind I'm living my life in the presence of God. If I will continually think about being in the presence of God, I won't say some things I might have said. I won't do some things I might have done. If I will remember I'm still in the presence of God, even when I think I'm alone, I won't do some things. If I remember I'm still in the presence of God when it's just me and my cell phone, I won't look at some websites. The core of relationship with God is living in awareness of His presence. And Paul reinforces that in the very next verse. He gives one of those, hey, you can be sure about this statements. And what he says you can be sure about is those that walk in those three things that he had mentioned in the previous verse. And here he even adds the idea of idolatry to the charge of covetousness, which makes sense to us. Idolatry generally is just anything we would put ahead of God or anything that we'd let take precedence over our relationship with God. And I want you to think about how that intersects those three things there. Some people will let a physical relationship they'll put that ahead of their relationship with God. Some people will let impurity or addiction or things like that get ahead of the relationship with God. And we'll even let money or greed or things we covet get in the way of our relationship with God. We'll elevate them above God and we would be an idolater. But what Paul wants to make sure we notice here is those folks have no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. It's kind of frightening language, isn't it? No inheritance. That's language of being cut off. But I want you to notice that even in talking about this, it's still predicated upon relationship. You know why those people can have no inheritance? Because only beloved children are heirs. We know how that works generally when people make a will. Who inherits when somebody dies? It's the children. And that's the contrast, I think, that's working here. Well, Paul's point is that wrath awaits those who don't walk together with God. And here's a reminder of God's power again. That God in His power will disinherit. That God in His power will destroy or judge those that walk in these things. The wrath of God awaits them. So just like Noah, we trust in God's power to destroy. Verse 6 says, don't let anybody deceive you with empty words. And I just want to mention that because that's out there. Sometimes in talking about grace, people talk about grace as in a way as that will allow you to keep sinning in some way and God not really care. That's cheap grace. That's not biblical grace. If you start believing that, you're allowing people to deceive you with empty words. Don't do that. Paul makes it clear that wrath awaits those who don't walk together with God. And the reason is because their walk is not governed by a relationship with God. And if you think about that, so what does that mean? That means they're not children of God or the sons of God. So they are sons of disobedience, as Paul says here. And then the warning is, don't become partners with them. Don't walk like them. Don't have your main relationship with the world. But for us, part of it is to avoid that wrath we just read about. But that's not our highest calling. We don't walk like them because of our relationship with God. He says here, for one time you were darkness, and our point is that's not who we are anymore. So you behave in a certain way because you don't want punishment, that's good, but behave because you are a child of God. And then he uses the language of walking as children of light. Walk as a beloved child of light. Walk together with the Lord. And again, could there be any better language to remind us of God's presence than light? Walk in light. Walk with the understanding and knowledge of the presence of God. But you notice that's not all he says. He has in light, but then he also says you are light. Think about that. You not only walk in light, you are light. And that's a demonstration of God's power in us. And again, like Noah, we trust that God will deliver the faithful, and that motivates our walk. So we said early on that Paul here's writing shows that our relationship with God governs our walk. And I think we've seen that, but let me suggest to you just another way of saying that. Our walk reflects our relationship with God. How I live reflects my relationship with God. So I want to key in on that phrase just for a minute here again. Relationship with God. I'm not going to say necessarily that phrase is overused, but I will say I think that phrase is sometimes oversimplified. And I think we want to be careful to avoid that. To think that phrase gets oversimplified sometimes to the point where people say it and we are just thinking about all the feels. My relationship with God is good because I feel good about it. But I want you to think about this. We wouldn't use that language, and we wouldn't argue that's not true in any relationship. Or at least not for very long. Right? I mean, no meaningful relationship is just about how we feel. Maybe in initial stages. But think if you were in a relationship with someone, but they never wanted to spend any time with you. They didn't ever prioritize you. They never thought about what it would take to please you. Would you like that relationship? We know that relationship is predicated upon how we act towards someone. It also includes how we treat someone, how we respond to someone. And so does our relationship with God include those elements of it. It's not just about the feels. And there's another phrase I think we need to be careful with that we use sometimes. And that's really the phrase personal relationship with God. And I want you to think about that. I think there's two things to consider in that point. One is it depends on what you mean when you say that. There's a way when you could say something about my personal relationship with God and I say, yes, that's right. If you're using the word personal to talk about individual versus collective, then yes, that's right. You wouldn't want to have an attitude that says, well, I know when I die, I'll be fine in judgment because I'm a member of that church down there where they do true things. No, that's not how it's going to work out. You're going to be judged as an individual. You and I are going to be judged about how much our individual personal relationship with God is. How has our heart been changed? How has our individual walk demonstrated the love of God in our life? So when I say personal relationship with God, I'm just acknowledging I will be judged as an individual. That's a good use of that phrase. But let me tell you a poor use of that phrase and a dangerous one is when we use the word personal relationship and we understand personal to mean unique or custom. Like I have my own special personal relationship with God. And you know what the language around that sounds like? You know, well, it's just between me and God. There was a song in the 70s. I think it was Tom T. Hall. Me and Jesus got our own thing going. You ever heard that song? We start thinking about our relationship as personal. So I have this private kind. Y'all don't know anything about it. Just between me and Jesus, this kind of relationship. Because what we're talking about when we think like that, we're really describing a relationship that's on our terms. And it leads us to thinking things like, well, as long as I'm happy, I know he's happy. And I know he wants me to be happy. And we over-personalize and customize it. What it ends up with when we start thinking about personal relationship with God, we'll end up reasoning this way. I know how I feel. I'm not interested in you talking to me about how I'm walking. And you see what we've done there? Now we've made the relationship with God subjective and mushy. We don't want to apply any objective standard to it. But our relationship with God is not subjective. And again, that's comforting. That's reassuring because I can know if I'm walking with God. Others can tell by looking if I'm walking with God. Think about the value in that, and then they can help me. So because because the standard is objective, that means you can look at the standard and see it, and you can look at me and say, Bob, you're off the path. Then you can come alongside and help me. That's comforting. That's reassuring. But it won't help me if my response is, well, I'm happy. Well, I've got a personal relationship with God. Don't talk to me about how I'm walking. Walk with God is not subjective. I can know I'm walking with God. Others can tell by looking, so others can help me. And again, that's comforting. That's reassuring. So our walk reflects our relationship with God. Let me tell you why else that's good news. Because, to kind of go back where we started, when I understand that connection, when I understand the connection between relationship and walking with God, now all of a sudden the New Testament is just full of relationship advice. Isn't that great? Guys, aren't you happy to know there's all the relationship advice you would ever need is available to you? Because I can go back to the ESV Bible and I can plug in the word walk and guess what? Boom, 31 hits. Right there, just in the epistles. Right? And this is good stuff here too, like the very first hit there, it's talking about Abraham. It's talking about walk in the footsteps of Abraham. Abraham. Talk about somebody with a relationship with God. And I have that available to me. And you can just keep looking. I mean, you're going to find out that we can walk by the Spirit. You're going to find out that your relationship with God is not about your feelings, but it is about your fruit. What are you producing? Are you producing those things the Spirit demonstrates are the fruits of the Spirit? You can look at your life again and see if you're walking with God, if your relationship with God. You're going to realize that others are evaluating your relationship with God. And that really becomes the simplest form of personal evangelism is living a life that makes it attractive to them. You'll learn that you need to not please yourself, but to please God. Again, think about that. Isn't that relationship language? Do you want to stay in a relationship with somebody who's just worried about pleasing themselves? Neither does God. And we want to walk so as to please God. We'll also find out we need to walk according to His commandments. So that's just four of them. I mean, but that's a lot of good stuff right there. Those four verses, right? To guide my life, to guide my relationship with God. You got 27 other places you can go in the epistles to learn one of those lessons about walking with God. So all I'm trying to say this morning is this. Sometimes when there's a fuzzy concept, we don't know where to start with it, so we just don't start. Relationship is sometimes a fuzzy concept. What I'm hoping to help us with is this. What I'm saying, and hopefully what you're seeing is this, is the key to unlocking our relationship with God, just working on our walk with God. And my hope for you going forward is that when you read one of those walk verses, is that you realize I am reading relationship advice. I am learning how to walk with God. Because to walk with God is to live in awareness of His presence and His power. Walking together. That's how the Bible talks about our relationship with God. So our relationship is not just about how we feel. Our relationship with God is about continually learning more about how He feels about us and responding to that. And being transformed because of how we feel about Him. It's constantly living with an awareness of His presence and His power in my life. It's about walking together. And that's what the Bible teaches us about our relationship with God. What about you this morning? Are you walking together with God? Do you think about His power and His presence? When your feet hit the floor the first thing in the morning, do you realize God is there? Let me suggest to you, this is the litmus test. So if you don't normally think about it, you're thinking about it now. God is present in your life. Does it terrify you? God sees everything you do, knows every thought you have. Does that terrify you? Then you're not walking with Him. That same knowledge can be the greatest comfort we can have in this life. It's to know that I can live in the presence and in the power of God. When that becomes a comfort to me, then I know I have relationship. I know we're walking together. What about you this morning? Can we do anything to help you with your relationship with God or help you in your walk? If we can, come forward now. Let us know while we stand and while we sing.
Would you be free from your burden?